So off we go. Thanks very much for coming along. So as I say, we've got... can you give me your name, please?
It's Phil Parker.
Phil Parker. And whereabouts were you born?
I was born in Spello Lane, which is in the house number 26 Spello Lane, which is about where I was born, about 100 yards from Everton Stadium.
So,
yeah.
Not much chance of getting away from Everton. and when was that?
I was born in November 1958, the 12th of November, around about the time we lost 10-4 to Tottenham Hotspur, unfortunately.
What did your parents do for a living?
My father was a steward in social clubs. My mother used to help behind the bar. She actually used to work in Aussie Wade's social club, which is at the top of Spello Lane. Some of the footballers used to go in there as well. And just after that, my father moved from being a social club manager to running a public house down in Bootle, which is where he moved to in 1970. Yeah.
And finally, whereabouts did you go to school?
I went to Turon Street Primary School, which is just off Walton Lane. And then from the age of 11, I went to Allsop, which is on Queenie's Drive, to the age of 16.
Thanks very much. Now to business. I think you've already answered this question, but how long have you been supporting Everton?
Yeah, brought up that way, because I was born quite close to the stadium, obviously. My father and all the family were Everton supporters. Pretty logical, really. We were not that far from Anfield, to be quite honest with you, but obviously Goodison was literally at the top of the road. So Everton was my team. It's my local team. Yeah.
And why Everton? There again, you've answered it, haven't you?
I would say, by the way, it was a good choice.
So your father was an Evertonian?
Yes, he was, yeah. Yeah. And our older brothers, yeah.
So right through the family?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Can you remember your first game?
I used to sneak in at three-quarter time. I used to go and stand in Goodison Road and I'd see the big boys trying to climb over the wall down by the church while the match was going on. But at three-quarter time, I'd go in. I wouldn't have a clue what I was looking at, you know, the excitement of the crowd and stuff. First game officially was against Coventry City around in 1967. And all I can remember is Willie Carr's red hair. He was playing for Coventry at the time, you know, it was just a massive problem. And his particular hair stood out completely. And we won the game 2-0, I've been told since later on.
And that was the first one you paid for?
Yeah, all I was paid for to be allowed to go in, yeah.
Did you go in with your dad?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you remember how much it was to get in?
No idea, he paid.
And I suppose it wasn't a great difficulty getting there, no buses and taxis?
Just a little stroll to the top of the road.
And from the past, I don't know if you want to separate it into eras, what's your favourite players, from old players?
If you'd like players I've seen, my hero was obviously Alan Ball. He was a massive star in this country at the time. There were footballs, Friday footballs named after him. He was the star of the World Cup, and obviously Everton bought him just after that, which was a good piece of scouting by Harry Cook. Coming on from there, Borg, Kendall and Harvey. I love the players from the past as well. I haven't seen them, but I'll take other people's word for it. They told me how good they were. I'll agree with them. My father used to rave about T.G. Jones, Tommy Lawton, coming up to Wally Fielding, Bobby Collins, even Alex Young was just before me. But I take people's opinions. If they tell me they were good, they were good, and I love the players, even the ones I haven't seen.
Yeah, I suppose Alex Young was just at the end of his career, wasn't he? 67.
Just missed him, yeah. Yeah, I've often told him, by the way. I wish I was 10 years older. I would have seen him play then.
Coming back to the current times, who's your favourite players at the moment?
Love Mikel Arteta. I think he's a proper, what we'd call a proper Everton footballer. Stephen Pienaar. We don't know what's going to happen with him at the minute, but he's been a wonderful servant. And his skill level and his energy that he puts into every game is terrific. Tim Cahill's been a big plus for us, and they've all been bargain buyers as well in today's market, so they're the players of the minute I really appreciate.
Do you think that's what makes it stand out in current football, the so-called bargain basement players seem to have more of an affinity with the clubs than the...
Yeah, they grow themselves as footballers, don't they? They don't come as the finished article. They come and they grow alongside the football club. Now, we'll see where we go from now. But the journey with those three footballers has been terrific so far for Everton. Yeah.
Long may it continue.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Have you ever met a player, present or...?
Yeah, I have, thankfully. To be quite honest with you, Dr. David of France, through him, and he started the Everton dinners 11 years ago, the Hall of Fame dinners. Mm-hmm. And at those functions, you had access to these gods from when you were a lad, you know. Great, great privilege to meet these people. That I always find them so humble as well. But nice people as well, nice that's, human beings.
That's very heartening to hear, because quite often I've got my own heroes of the past, and you wonder if whether they turn out to feet of clay. You know, if you meet them and think, I wish I would never have met those.
No, but that, you're saying your experience. That hasn't happened so far. Yeah.
Great stuff. So, did you meet Alan Ball?
I did. A few times, yeah. Just he becomes an ordinary guy to you when you know them a few times. And I know Alex Young quite well. Mm. He's an absolute beautiful person. Gordon West, Derek Temple, wonderful people.
Do you think it's just us looking through rose-tinted glasses, or do you think that these players do have a greater affinity with Everton than perhaps other club players have had for their clubs?
Well, it's for other fans of other clubs to make their minds up about their players. And from my point of view, because of my age, these people I'm talking about never had a bad match, because I didn't see them play. So I only read about the good memories about them. And because of that, maybe my views tinted a little bit. But they're lovely people anyway, despite the fact they also played for my football club.
Going into managers, who was your favourite manager of the past?
Howard Kendall. I've obviously met him also. He's been on the scene recently doing functions and dinners. Mm-hmm. A normal man, you know what I mean? A nice guy. And all the players who played for him said he was one of the boys and a great man manager as well. It's a shame he didn't stay a bit longer. I do think he could have been our Shankly. But there were certain circumstances at the time when he left. He did get itchy feet, I think. He wanted to try pasties new. And it's a shame, because in the pantheon of great managers now, when they look back, he's hardly ever really mentioned. And he could have won 5, 6, 8 championships with Everton and various other trophies as well. It's a shame.
You think the European ban had a lot to do with that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
To move.
Yeah. He got a chance to go to Barcelona, didn't he, initially? Finished up going to Bilbao. By the time he came back, we were not back to square one, but not far off it. And when he'd left, we were cash rich and also the best club in the country. And in the space of, I think it was 3 or 4 years, we lost all that in his absence.
I certainly think he was perhaps the first almost approachable manager that as me growing up through the years.
Yeah, the old Stern type of man who looked about 150 when you're a young man, yeah. He seemed like a little bit, he was one of us to more of a degree, yeah.
Because Harry Katrick always looked like your Stern uncle, didn't he?
I found he was like your Stern uncle.
And I'm sure that we won't get an awful lot of candidates, or we get a few candidates here. Most memorable Everton match. There's one keeps coming up.
Well, for all the wrong reasons. Absolutely terrifying experience to well, it happened twice in 4 years, and
this is the threat of relegation.
Yeah, it was like being stuck in a battle at the top of Niagara Falls, looking over the cliff, and it obviously went on for quite some time. We seemed to know it was going to come in for a good few weeks out. We were going to be in this situation, and I remember a 1-0 win at West Ham a couple of weeks before, which probably saved us just as much as the last match. But horrible experiences in 94 and in 98, obviously. 98 we nearly went down, we stayed up also again on the last day. Good job we were at home on both times, I think. Yeah, don't want to talk about it, to be honest.
How about more happy memorable matches then?
I think it didn't end up being the happy ending to the season, but when we beat Liverpool 2-0 at Anfield and Gary Lineker scored the second goal, we thought we'd put them to the sword for the Championship anyway. We were the best side in the league, and certainly the best side in the city. Kenny Dalglish brought himself back just after that, and they won 11 out of 12, which is fair enough to them. But that day we were riding the crest of a wave. It was a wonderful.
Was that the one where Radcliffe scored?
Yeah, Radcliffe scored the first, and Lineker was put away, breaking into their half, and his eyes came out of his head, his tongue came out, the hunger, the desire, and then the skill at the end. Over about 10 or 15 seconds, wonderful moment. A lot of our fans spilled on the pitch from the corner of the cop in those days.
I remember on that day, I thought the big difference was that they had a breakaway in the first half and it was Rush against Southall, and I had no doubt that Southall had saved it. And then we had Lineker against Grobbelaar, and I had no doubt that Lineker would score, and I thought the tide's turned.
Neville was world class. He was at the peak of his powers then, and unfortunately I think a month later we lost him to in an innocuous game playing for Wales against Ireland. He did his ankle really badly, fell down a pothole or something. But I had the same feeling around that time for years. No problem. If someone got through, no problem, they've got to get past Neville. And I can remember being shocked when balls went past him. It's gone in. It's gone past him, because it just didn't happen.
Over the course of the 43 years now, isn't it, since 67, where do you see the changes in the match? Obviously, there's huge changes all around the place, but give a few of your little highlights of things that you can put your hand on and say there's such a difference between this and then and now. Things like the food, things like the programmes, the admission charges.
Yeah, the movement of Sky into football and the formation of the Premier League in 1992, which was supposed to be the great achievement for football. I think it's been detrimental. I know we've had a lot of top foreign players coming over, but it's very much fractured the league now, and there's 2, 3, 4 clubs who can afford the top players and the rest are all scrambling. In fact, it seems to be getting worse every year. I know there's been a little tightening up this last year or two, the top 8 or so, but before then it was literally the top 3 or 4 paying huge salaries and bringing the top players in from abroad. So I think that's been the biggest difference, and instead of being a better experience for football fans and football clubs, we all seem to be skint, got no money, and we're mortgaging ourselves for the sake of players, agents and managers. My experience hasn't changed too much, to be quite honest with you. I know there's all seated stadiums since the Hillsborough disaster, but I was sitting down anyway because my back had gone early on. I had to have a seat from about 25 years ago, so it didn't make any difference to me. Stadiums are better. I love our football ground. I love Goodison Park. It's a proper old-fashioned stadium, and even if we move from Everton and Goodison, I'd love to build one on the same lines with the same atmosphere contained inside.
Yeah. What do you think of the attitude of the fans between then and now?
Yeah, when I was a boy, a fan was somebody who lived in the area of the football team they watched, and was a real football supporter and usually knowledgeable. I think there's a lot of people going to football now, I don't know what they're watching, they're going for the day out or the corporate experience. There's still a hardcore of fans for all clubs, but a lot of people have also been priced out of watching football. Some of the working class people have been priced out, which is a shame, because they play hard. They play the game at the lower level in the Sunday League and during the weekend in the schools, and they know what they're talking about and what they're watching. And I think there was far more knowledge in football crowds years ago than there is now.
How about behaviour-wise of fans?
Yeah, I lived through the hooligan era, and every club had a big hooligan element connected to it. You could have a bit of trouble wherever you went if you wanted to, and it's still a little bit there now, but I think it's gentrified now, it's far more civilised, yeah. And you can keep well clear if you want to.
Now going on to the real nitty gritty, have you got any match day rituals?
Well, afterwards I used to go down County Road and used to be drinking as much as possible, but not so much now, I'm getting a bit older. And the rituals we used to have changed a little bit, I've got a little bit older now. Maybe I've got a bit wiser. Going to see George Orr outside the Winslow, and get me match day supplement from him. He sells a fanzine, you know. And then say hello to some people there, the faces you know and appreciate. And it's a nice nice feeling to see the old friendly faces, and then in you go really, yeah, about quarter to three.
So no lucky scarves, or
I have got a pair of lucky socks, and I've still got them. I wore them when we stayed up against Wimbledon, and I wore them when we stayed up against Coventry, and they've got Donald Duck on the side, the blue, and I don't show them to anybody, but I have got them there for emergencies.
You realise that's on record now.
That's fine.
Again, talk about the derby matches, the good, bad, indifferent memories.
Yeah, we haven't been too successful. I remember when I first started watching, we were about 10, 11 games in front of them, you know, wins against losses. And over the period of 40 years, they've turned that round, Liverpool. They do seem to have been rather fortunate against us, but they have been better than us for quite some time, for the most part. So I suppose it's only to be expected. And it's been a big game for them and us, and then they get themselves ready for it. They've done well against us down the years, but there's been some good moments as well. And we're building it just at the moment. 2010, we seem to be catching them up quite quickly, I think. To be quite honest, we've got the edge on them squad-wise. We'll see what happens at the minute, but I think the near future is going to be quite good for us now.
Do you see the division between the Everton and Liverpool supporters as being greater now than it was in the 60s, 70s?
Yeah, I think there was far more respect in those days for both clubs, for either club's achievements. Liverpool have become an international brand, and we haven't yet, obviously. So we haven't won a trophy now for 15 years, and that's something else. When I was 12 years of age, starting my secondary school, we were league champions. We'd won it for the seventh time. I think they'd won six. We'd won more FA Cups than them. So they'd turned that right round with the European success and also domestic success. So with that, I suppose, comes a little bit of we're better than you, shall we say, attitude, which gets Evertonians annoyed. But not me, because I can remember when we were better than them, well better than them, and I know what we are as a football club. That'll never change.
What's the furthest you've ever travelled to go to a match?
I did done the Rotterdam and the Cup Winners' Cup finals. I've been a staunch fan for a home and away for about 20 years now. I started in the 70s and I stopped through hooliganism, to be honest with you. But I've started back again going home and away about 20 years and I don't miss many now. But I haven't done anything like China, nothing like that. The furthest has been the Dutch for the final.
How did you get over there?
We drove to the Hook of Harwich, and then we got a ferry over. And we were intending to have a few days in Rotterdam, come back and go directly to London and Wembley for the FA Cup final in 85. When we got to Rotterdam, everybody was saying there's no rooms available. And we were early, you know, it was a couple of days before the final. Oh no, there's no rooms for football support. And I started getting the gist of what was happening. They'd had Aston Villa over there for the European Cup final, and they'd had Tottenham Hotspur over there for a final, and their supporters had pulled sinks off walls and smashed windows and smashed mirrors in hotel rooms and stuff, and they wanted nothing to do with us. Eventually we were in a bar sort of bemoaning our luck, and a local guy looked at us, didn't think we looked too bad, gave me a phone number, and I went to this, it wasn't salubrious in any way, shape or form, bed and breakfast, and I had to promise to give her our passports, all our luggage, as much money as she wanted, would she please take us in for two nights, and eventually she relented, very reluctantly, but she let us in. But it was difficult because of the reputation of English fans at that time to get any accommodation. I actually asked the police, could they put us up for the night in the cell at one time? Jokingly, but if they said yes, it was somewhere to sleep. Yeah. Oh no, you're okay, Liverpool fans or Everton fans. And so that was an idea of how the continental people viewed English football supporters.
But there's the famous story then of Rotterdam with the police playing football with the fans.
In the square.
Do you think there was perhaps a slight betterment in their attitude towards the Everton fans once the hordes arrived?
We thought so. Yeah. It went really well. Everybody seemed friendly towards us and vice versa. There was actually quite a few Celtic supporters there because Rapid Vienna had knocked them out in controversial circumstances. There'd been a replayed game And there was plenty of Celtic fans there supporting Everton on the day, which was interesting. It doesn't often get mentioned, to be honest, but there was plenty of them there.
So you didn't join in the football and the square?
I wasn't in the square because of our situation and just scraping into this accommodation. We were on our best behaviour, to be quite honest with you. Yeah.
Have you, apart obviously from the grand old lady at Goodison here, have you got a favourite ground? Where's the one that you like going to?
Favourite stadium? Old Trafford takes your breath away. There's a top deck at Old Trafford that you've got to know it's there before someone's got to point it out to you before you can see it. And it's built on the site where they nearly always played, which is important as well. There's no houses around there, but it's a magnificent cathedral what they've built there. And the fact that the best Laws and Charltons have played there, well, I think that's important, a thread with the past as well. I'd love Everton to do something like that.
So for that reason, although you can appreciate the likes of the Emirates, with it not having the history there, that takes something away.
It doesn't do anything for me. It might be my age. The new stadium thing just doesn't do anything for me. I've been the Emirates, no character, just a big bowl with red seats in. I know they're trying to put some individual characteristics into the stadium, which they should have done at the start, to identify it as being Arsenal Stadium. I love my crisscross Archibald Leach design at Goodison. Yeah, I love my old stadium.
I was wondering if you'd say White Hart Lane, because I think that's got quite a lot
it's
in
got
common.
A feeling of Everton, yeah. Yeah, but they're more or less moving from there, aren't they, soon? They're going to build right next door to it.
I think the planning permission was denied, not this week.
Yeah?
I think so, but I only saw the headline.
There is an affinity with people my age with Tottenham because Everton and Liverpool and Everton and Tottenham Hotspur in the 1960s were known as playing attractive football, and they were both successful around the Alec Young days. Yeah, we were sort of competitors at the time. Similar stadiums, and also if you played to Butio, and if you had a Tottenham kit and an Everton kit, it was a lovely clash with the green with the green pitch as well.
I could do another 4 hours on Subutio. Ground share. What were your feelings about ground share?
It doesn't concern me because my memories are at Goodison, and if we move. It really doesn't matter to me there. I don't think it's going to happen, and I know there's a lot of opposition on both sides, but it's not a problem to me because if we leave Goodison Park, well, that's me. That's my memories locked away there, and where we play elsewhere is just a football ground.
Interesting point. Is football these days too commercial?
Yes. The hype, the promotion, the constant commentaries on football matches on the television telling you something's marvellous when you sit there, you know quite well it isn't. But it's part of their job to sell the product that they've got on the screen. David Beckham's toenails broke or something, you know. It's incessant, really. And now we've got the World Cup coming up in 2010. And I'll go into overdrive again, yeah. We tend to get ourselves in this country, hopefully, excited about the World Cup final, the European Championships. And then we don't manage to win it. Like half of England is embroiled in riots and in the streets, you know, the drunken fans smashing windows and stuff, because part of that's because of the hype. And we're built up to believe we're going to deliver every time, we haven't so far anyway since 1966.
That's true. I've just got a couple of questions around the collection. Obviously, you visited the collection when it was here in the library. If you had one piece, they say, right, go in there, take your pick, take something home, what would it be?
That's a point, that's a question, isn't it?
I'll lead you with one of mine. I'd take the 1933 Wembley football home. One that Dixie got it in the net through, I think it was the back of his head, wasn't it?
I wish he'd come powering in and smashed him in, like, no doubt he did. Unfortunately, that looked a bit of a scruffy one, didn't it, in the final. He sort of twisted around as he went up. What would I keep?
It's a difficult one just to be thrown at you.
It is. It's there's the old season tickets from the 1890s, from when we first started in Stanley Park. Let's have a think. That's still running. I'll think about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perhaps go into something that's in the world of football is huge these days with club ownership. What do you think would be the best way for Everton? Do you think it's, you know, sort of shaky money coming in, throwing lots of monies at it and having no heart in the club? Or the way we've got it with Bill Kenwright having all heart but perhaps not the funding?
Yeah, the balancing act. I don't admire what's happened at Chelsea or Manchester City. There's volatility this close season now with speculation about possible transfers. If it wasn't for Chelsea and Manchester City, there wouldn't be any speculation because nobody else has got any money.
Mm-hmm.
They are operating at a huge loss thanks to Mr. Abramovich down at Chelsea, and also no doubt Manchester City will soon be in the same situation. I think it's very unfair. I think it's detrimental to the good of football, and I don't know why, what we can do about it. I don't know why the football authorities let this happen, and clubs building up such massive debts as well. It's just insanity. Mm. How we've got ourselves in this position, that keeping up with the Joneses sort of thing, which is primarily Chelsea to a degree, Manchester United. Although Manchester United have a fantastic amount of turnover every year, Chelsea run into debt every year. You know, it's just someone's money that's being given into the club. Even when John Moores financed Everton in the early 60s, they were interest-free loans. He got his money back. There's no sign of Abramovich getting his money back down there, so it's completely unfair.
Well, that's the FIFA's viewpoint, isn't it? That these clubs are running unfairly.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone can run a, if Everton could run at £700 million worth of debt, I'm sure we'd be right up there if that was allowed. I mean, obviously the banks won't let us because we haven't got, Bill hasn't got the money behind him to service that kind of loan. But it's not right. It's not right. And basically Chelsea have bought everything they've won recently. They haven't won them, they've bought them. And I'll never give them credit for that.
So you definitely think that takes the gloss off any glory?
Yeah, the model that we've tried to do with Bill Kenwright and David Moyes is terrific. And I think a lot of clubs are looking at Everton and thinking, well, they've done it in a certain way, but they're doing it, and it's admired by football, you know, the way we've gone about it. There's been pressure on Bill to try and get a buyer for the last few years, but some clubs have got themselves in a right mess through the wrong people coming into football. And Bill's a safe custodian of the club. He loves the club, and he would never sell to anybody who might endanger the football club. And I'm a massive fan of Bill Kenwright, and I have been for years. I've had to stand my corner recently, although last year or so, I think people are coming round to my point of view that he's been a great custodian for the club.
That's my opinion as well, but it's
good
you're listening to.
Good man, yeah.
Final question. This is your heart question. What's Everton mean to you?
Everton has been part of my life ever since I can remember thinking. They're my local club. There's something I love with a huge passion. They're also a club that I like to project to other people, the friendliness and the family feel of the club as well as being such a historical club. Founder members of the Football League. We're still in the top eight of football now, more divisions at the top than anybody else. Not so much in terms of success, but maybe that's only a transient thing. What we've got with the history and the tradition of the club, for me, means an awful lot more. Apart from my family, they mean everything to me.
And I promise to be the last question now. Can you give us an Everton fact or story that perhaps you think other people may not know, or something that you find interesting, or a little gee whiz story or fact?
A good one or a bad one?
Up to you.
Okay. I know when Alex Young and Jimmy Gable were left out of the team at Blackpool in 1966 and we lost the game 2-0, Joe Royle's debut. Harry Katsik, he more or less stopped being involved in first team affairs for a little while. He left it to his coach because he was that annoyed at the reaction of the leaving out of those two players. But as we got towards the FA Cup final that year, he started coming back and taking control of team affairs.
Yeah.
And then everything was smoothed over. That's not such a great story, but it's a strange one.
I've heard that the players knew that if there was a photo call, because you saw him with a tracksuit on.
Yeah.
With his suit on underneath. Yeah.
And I remember we drew 2-2 at Anfield in 1979, I think. Mick Lyons had scored an own goal and Andy King scored another one, and I was in the Black Horse on County Road about 6:30 that night, and the team, some of the team came in, Andy King, Gary Stanley, Mick Lyons, George Wood, and they sat in the side room by us, and Mick Lyons got cramp. George Wood was asked to go round to somebody's house to introduce this George to his son to his father, and his father was out and he came back and said he wasn't even in the house and all that stuff. But even those lads were ordinary lads. They were just lads out for the drink. I think it's changed a lot since then. You've got me there.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thanks ever so much for all your insights and your time. It's been really interesting.
Good.
Thanks very much.
Lovely, Peter. Thanks very much.
Cheers.